This week on RSBNB Update, the Summer Skill Off picks the most popular, unpopular skill. We also do a live first reaction to the bank beta, and we love what we see. Also this week, changes to the weapon diversity beta, and introducing the Skilling Council. This is RSBNB Update, episode 735, recorded Thursday, August 1st, 2019, the Blockbuster Bank Beta. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Those of you guys listening to us not live, you guys aren't noticing anything different, but nonetheless, I think we might already have a show title for this week, Dennis, if things don't change as they are, right?
Yeah, it could be. Could be.
Anyway, so welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again. Hopefully you guys had a very fruitful double XP weekend. I know I did. It wasn't really that high key for me. How was yours? We'll talk more about what we actually did later, but let's get this out of the way.
Actually mine was pretty low key. I did a lot. I pretty much focused on junior. I brought my main out a little bit. I had to do a little something, right? Couldn't waste XP. I went dungeoneering with some friends, and they rocked, and I got my 75 dungeon.
Oh, that was us.
Yeah, so I'll be ready to rock Prif really soon. I just got to do a few quests and get my summoning. I got 5 level summoning, and then we're heading to Prif, baby.
Nice, nice, nice. All right, so, my double XP weekend was largely spent woodcutting. I think I got the most woodcutting XP in the RSBNB community this weekend, believe it or not. Which is surprising to me, but I'll take it, I guess.
So, own it, Shane.
So let's talk a bit about what we got this week for RS updates. And, this week was supposed to be primarily the week for the combat beta part 2 and, of course, the bank beta, which is, I'm going to say spectacular. But we'll save that for just a wee bit. I want to get the summer skill off.
Shane's going to call
stuff
something spectacular. The phones. Hold up.
It is compared to the bank that we have right now.
I know, but I remember when we got that little just taste, and
we
you're
like
"This is hideous."
Yeah, no, it was hideous. Anyways, so the summer skill off taking place in the Lumbridge Crater. This is kind of a replacement for the beach, and the idea behind this is that there's 6 different skills on showcase: agility, dungeoneering, hunter, runecrafting, herblore, and cooking. It's looking like right now that dungeoneering will be the one that comes out on top, followed by agility at number 2. Cooking was the first one eliminated with the summer skill off. And for each date that the skills remain in, they'll get their base XP rates increased by 10% for every day they stay in the competition. So with that, you can see why dungeoneering and agility are sticking around.
Well, and those are the 2 skills people probably enjoy training the least.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. You get your regular event tokens with this, and the things that you can unlock are the Blight Reaver, 2-handed sword override, and the Snack Yak cosmetic override for familiars. And yes, that is a yak of all things covered in food.
Yes.
Looking at the picture here, bread, cheese, watermelon, pineapples, apples, onions. Looks like there's a hunk of beef hanging off its ear.
Where's the pizza?
I don't see any pizza in here. I do see a carrot, though, and a chicken.
Okay, sure. I like the Snack Yak.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be able to complete this event because I haven't been spending too much time there.
Yeah, I am getting tokens, but I have elected to do other things with my tokens.
Yeah, me too. I want to talk about a bit how silly this looks, this event. And I think that's a good point to start off with.
Yeah.
Because you go do
a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it is. Because you go do agility, and you got this entire circular path of people just running around in a circle. And if you have the one walk animation override turned on where your hands swing out in front of you, your feet don't even move. So you're just gliding around in a circle for minutes on end, and you're getting AFK agility XP.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
Not a lot, but, I mean, it's a thing nonetheless. And, you know, I think with that we could move on to the Dungeoneering one, because this is eclipsed by that one. Your character disappears into a hole.
Yeah.
And my silence is saying all I have to say about that.
But what does this show you? What does this tell you? What's the bigger picture here?
I was hoping we'd wait a little while to get to that, but...
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was jumping the gun. My bad.
But, you know, the bigger picture here is that XP is just handed out like candy.
Oh, that was not the picture I was going for.
Oh, okay, Shane. What's your picture?
I should have known. The picture I'm looking at says that agility and Dungeoneering aren't very fun to train, so people will do it in any way possible that is not the traditional training. So maybe we need to be looking at that and introducing some more methods or mechanics or alternative training methods.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
I want to take your toys.
That's right.
I'm like, I want more toys.
more on that later. Tycho, I know you're listening to us right now. Can you check what skills is next up to be eliminated? I didn't check that before we began here today, but I think that'd be a nice thing to know. And the other skills are, of course, Hunter, Herblore, Cooking. We talked about Cooking being eliminated already. And, I mean, did you go to any of these other booths, or did you just leave it as is?
I left it as is. It's more beneficial to get the mystery boxes than to actually go down there and do the stuff. So that's what I have done.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's something that might need to be looked at, is that if the focus is indeed on mystery boxes, then maybe we need to be looking at what these events are actually doing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. It's just that it's a more, it's just a better use of your time. I mean, you have a certain amount of time, you have to decide how to use it, and you get more out of the mystery boxes than you would going down there and getting 75K agility an hour. I mean, that's great at a low level, but not once you're, you know, it's almost like
the other skills, of course,
there's like pre-99 and then post-99, and 75K post-99, forget that. Forget it.
That's very true. That's very true. And that's my picture of the way the game is too, after looking at Double XP Weekend. So, of course, more on that later. You know, I don't know that there's much else we need to say about the Summer Skill Off. I think we ticked all the boxes here with this, just that it's largely AFK focused XP. Currently, Dungeoneering in first, as expected, Agility in second. Third is Herblore, and everything else as of time right now is eliminated. Agility leading Herblore by 170,000 votes, and Dungeoneering well ahead in first.
You know, the question I have about this whole event, though, is what happens with the winner? Like, what is the purpose of winning?
I thought maybe we might, you know, get, say, oh, I don't know, we just had a double XP weekend, but maybe a 1.5 times XP weekend in the winter.
I mean, something, but, like, what happens to the skill that wins? Like, I don't see what what you get out of voting and your skill winning.
representation points? I mean, like, feel-good points, you know?
I guess. Okay. Yeah, that was my biggest... That was, like, my biggest issue was, like, okay, but what's this for?
If Dungeoneering wins, Mod Shawnee gets 20 pounds from Mod Osborne.
That was a sucker bet.
Yeah, that you was shouldn't a have
sucker
made that bet
when he made it. Oh, poor guy. Yeah, he's going to be 20 quid lighter. Is that what they say?
Yep, that's right. And I mean, at this point, it was over 100,000 ahead. I don't know why he thought it would pull forward.
Maybe he didn't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, that's the summer skill off. You know, lots of XP, kind of short on climax. We don't know what's going to be happening with it after the event concludes. So I guess the point for this is that if you wanted your skill to remain in play for longer, you should have donated to it more. And the longer the skill remains in play, the more XP you get from it. So more Dungeoneering and more Agility XP is what I'm hearing.
Okay.
And I think that's as simple as it is.
Yeah.
Splitting it all apart.
I guess. So what is hilarious, it's like a reverse popularity contest. It's like Dungeoneering wins because it's the least popular thing to train. It's kind of weird.
And Agility, second, yeah. Then Herblore.
Yeah. And that's only because it's expensive, so people yeah. take anything free. You know?
Yeah, I did get 120 Herblore, too. So I know the pains of training that.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, let's move on to the patch notes then. Patch notes this week focusing in, of course, on the Land Out of Time, yet again amongst other things. But let's just start diving through some of these right now. First up, the materials required to tan dinosaur hide incorrectly stated 250 coins. This has been adjusted to the correct amount of 25 coins. I'm guessing that this was just a text issue in the Tanner interface, so not much to write home about here.
Right.
The Anachrony Agility course has been added to the quick chat options. I know players wanted that. You know, being able to quick chat the various numbers and whatnot out and just talk about the course in general. Because, you know, quick chat at this point is pretty much just a meme unless you're on a quick chat only world, right? So.
Yeah.
When on a Slayer task for dinosaurs, the final kill will now give the correct amount of loot. I wonder how long people have been being shortchanged about that.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't know. There'd be no.
You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. And I mean, those dinosaurs aren't the easiest thing to kill.
No, I got down to 20 and canceled my task. I am not kidding.
Yeah,
I was so like over it at that point. I'm like, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah, and you know what? That
kicking my ass.
We were of course worried about the drop rates on dinosaurs when Land Out of Time came out. So. We'll have to see how they're being canceled and whatnot going forward. The Anachronia teleport spell can no longer be used on free-to-play worlds. Yes, yes, that is a thing, believe it or not. I didn't find this out until, you know, a week and a half after the update ship, but if you go into your teleport interface, there's an actual Anachronia teleport. That's not lodestone-based. Oh. The caveat, of course, being that you need to unlock it with the totem.
Oh.
Yeah. So it teleports you exactly to the totem.
To
now,
the totem. Okay.
We were talking about having issues getting around the island. Well, here we are. Another way to get around.
Yeah.
Once you get that totem piece.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, real good.
And, you know, while we're talking about the future of Anachronia, we are recording this on Thursday. So by the time you guys are hearing this, the month ahead has already shipped. So just keep that in mind, everybody, that there is going to be stuff coming forward this Friday and potentially some updates that might influence what we're talking about now by the time you're listening. So just a bit of a forewarning on that. The extended super anti-fire potion is now affected by Lantatimi incense sticks. That is good. Pavasaurus Rex animations have been cleaned up and his tongue no longer clips with his throat when eating bait. You know, I love the attention to detail on this.
Yeah, that's goofy.
But I mean, hey, if you're going to have a dinosaur, it better well be a good dinosaur animation, right?
You definitely should. You can't have its tongue all flopping around.
Especially with the huge amount of effort and focus that has been put into Land Out of Time. Yeah. More information for the Player Lodge and Storehouse building upgrades has been added to the base camp management interface on Anachronia, in particular, what it does and what you need to build them. And Lanakea, the new level 90 Slayer Master on Anachronia, will now reward the correct amount of co-op Slayer points when completing a task. You know, Double XP Weekend and Slayer is also, of course, a time that people will do co-op Slayer. And, you know, I don't know who would have been getting the points for this if nobody was getting points or if it was just the wrong amount. But I do know some people who do co-op Slayer on Double XP Weekend, so this is a good fix for them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you really don't think about co-op Slayer that much, right? But I know people who use it
well,
often.
Because it's centered around the low to mid levels. And so, I mean, if you do it, a lot of times you might have a friend that might be lower level that just needs some help or wants to get something out of the co-op shop. I mean, I don't know what that would be, but maybe they do. Maybe they want one of the vets or something.
Yeah, you know? Who knows? Moving on to some combat fixes now. The Staff of Darkness will now degrade correctly. The Eldritch Crossbow is included in the range skill guide. And the top of the crop this week, the Uldak Coil, which of course is the magic version of the Dwarf Multicannon, will no longer heal you if you have a blood spell active.
That's just kind of cute.
Could you imagine how powerful this would be?
It would, but you know, I was trying to think. I was like, where would you use a cannon where you'd actually be taking damage and being hurt? And
you know, if we go down this track, we're going to have the cannon crowd coming at us because, like, we don't use cannons, you and I. But
not really.
There are dedicated people I know that swear by their cannon in one form or another. So, if this is a bad thing or that no one uses cannons, I'll hear from them. I will.
Oh, no, I'm not saying no one uses them. I'm saying there's nowhere that you would use one where you're taking damage. So that I don't even know how they found this out because I wouldn't even notice it. Because I'm not – I mean, where you're using cannons, you know, dags if you're doing those after familiarization.
But
you want
the ranged cannon for that one.
Right, and then Dark Beast, you can cannon. Eretz, you can cannon. I guess Eretz – that one would be the one that I guess you could take damage there if you were cannoning them.
How do the Eretz interact with their special attack in a cannon?
Well, they all get a circle around you and they beat their chest and beat the shit out of you. And then you take your scythe and you swing it in a big circle and let the cannon do its thing. And it just keeps basically what the cannon's doing is bringing them towards you. It's taking them from way out here and bringing them towards you.
Okay, and then, fair enough.
I mean, if you got the right armor and the right setup, you need your vamp and you scrimshaw on your vamp aura. I mean, it's relatively simple to survive. It's just you got to watch it, though, because they are Eretz, and if you're not paying attention, you know, yeah. You get about five or six of them, and they all do that at the same time. You know.
You're going to have a bad day.
Hello, Def. Yeah. Hello, Def. How are you doing? I ain't seen you in a while.
Here's one for you. Loot beams have been added to Revenant drop-in answers. If you ever go fight Revenants.
I have. So this is good.
The Tazar Herr found during and after the Brink of Extinction quest will now count towards Tazar Slayer tasks. Brink of Extinction. Of course,
bringing back bad
memories for those of us who did it in the first week.
Oh, yeah, I didn't do that, but I get all these Tazar people mixed up.
Oh, like, yeah, me too. They all have very similar names, but they're very different meanings and whatnot. The Wizard Tower's trapped Lesser Demon now has its missing death animation restored, and funny story about this one. This is actually how I first started training magic.
Really?
Using air spells up on that lesser demon. Yeah.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Mm-hmm, because it's caged, so it can't hurt you.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yep. And this was back in the day, even, you know, before I had a staff, so I was casting each one manually.
Oh, geez.
Uh-huh. Skilling changes now. When you reach level 8 mining, you'll now properly show that you have increased critical hit chance with copper and tin instead of just copper in the skill guide. Now, this is something that I think many players are going to overlook, and this is testament to Jagex for putting in patch notes and focusing in on the mid-level player base with this, because the next one is in relation to Menaphos, and in particular, if you have the Menaphos lodestone unlocked, the daily challenge for Luminous Memories Divination will now take you to Menaphos if you accept the prompt to go to the nearest lodestone.
Yeah, this one I was really I didn't know about at first because I didn't know how this was going to affect me getting to the Sofenheim Slayer dungeon.
Okay.
Because I had that on my garden portal.
Oh.
And so you tune it to the Luminous Memories, right? Like uh-huh. that colony, and it drops you like right. It used to be right in front of the dungeon, so I don't even know how I'm going to get there now.
Well, you know, one thing that many people might not realize is that if you use your lodestone to Menaphos and you go to the bridge, there is a right-click option that allows you to travel directly to Sofenheim and puts you within distance of the Slayer dungeon.
Oh, cool. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that has apparently existed since the beginning.
Just one of the many, many mysteries of Menaphos, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently didn't uncover because we got bored and left.
And they also removed the skill guide entry for Luminous Memories about needing desert heat protection since the colony is now inside the walls of Sofenheim and you're not affected by the heat inside the cities.
Okay.
Next up, the Master Slayer cape perk when attached to the Max or Comp cape will now proc correctly when getting new tasks from Slayer Masters.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's the one that makes you that lets you have a VIP ticket, right?
Yeah, it'll allow you to pick your own. I mean, it actually lets you pick your own task. So
yeah, and it lets you pick it. It's not every time. It's
oh no,
I forget how many times a day it is.
Yeah, it's
apparently it's a 20% chance. What do you mean one in five?
It is good,
right?
Like it's really good, and it seems like breaks from time to time and just doesn't work. So I'm glad that part got.
I'm not going to ask the question why someone would be doing Slayer past 120, but that's just me.
People like it, Shane, and that's how. If you're not making money on skills and you're not doing elite PVM, that's where your money's at.
Slayer's your bae.
Slayer's your bae.
An issue allowing
Shane,
players.
You're so woke.
That's what we like to hear. That's exactly.
I didn't even know.
That's exactly the way. That's exactly the way it'd be here on this podcast. An issue allowing players to access the Tears of Gothic's D&D without having completed the quest has been fixed.
That seems like that's kind of a fairly big deal, huh?
Yeah, it is. I don't know how long that would have been in there, but hey, it's been fixed. Yeah. The Fremenic Isles mine no longer refers to Runite ore and has been updated to refer to Dracolith ore. And then just some quick little other patch notes here. The familiar free zone for the mage training arena no longer extends outside the walls of the arena, which of course could be troublesome if you're trying to take your familiar down to the polypore dungeon, because you have to walk right by that. You'll no longer see a message saying that your Charos clue carrier has taken out -1 of a clue when completing a clue. Teleporting to certain areas with a portable fairy ring will now correctly prevent you from doing so in various areas. So I'm not sure where exactly you wouldn't be able to use a portable fairy ring, but this is a check that's been added on that. So
that makes me want to know.
Yeah,
now.
I want to know as well. And, you know, I also have to say here with this in terms of other things that we could get a little bit more clarification on when it comes to patch notes this week. an issue related to the basket of oranges has been fixed. I have no idea.
We have oranges?
Yeah, from the orange trees, of course.
Well, I guess that'll keep the scurvy away. I didn't realize it.
Yeah, orange tree farming is very was very key at one point or another because it was one of the seeds that you could get cheaply. And, you know, if you were doing farming runs back in the day, maple wood and orange fruit was the most economical way to get 99th farming.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I just flew until I could do the palms and then.
Yeah. We'll talk more about farming later.
Yeah, we got farming coming.
Yeah. The color, change the color message that appears when you don't meet puzzle requirement to make it more readable. That's another one.
Yes.
I mean, what puzzle, what color requirement? It would just be nice to get some further clarification on that.
Yeah.
So that is our 2 cents of feedback in terms of the patch notes this week. All right. So moving on, I think it's time to move on to the main event.
Whoop, whoop.
The bank rework beta. We're going to start with the bank rework beta because this one, in my view, is more important than the combat weapon diversity one because we already knew what was coming with the weapon diversity beta. So that was largely just implemented as is. Whereas with the bank beta, this is something that we actually get to play around with and experience for the first time. So,
yes.
All right, let's have a look at the bank rework beta. So you'll recall here that this bank rework beta initially started as a drive to get placeholders into game. And we got significantly more than placeholders with this. So I want to just start off by noting how big the bank can be. And you'll note that if anybody is watching this on video, you can literally extend the bank to be as big as your game window if you so desire. Which is something I can imagine players are going to be doing.
Woo!
So there's that. There's also a revamped flow on the right-hand side that shows whether you'll be withdrawing to your equipment, your worn equipment, or your beast of burden. You'll be able to see them all up at a glance if you have the bank window large enough. And this is something we really didn't appreciate before when we were looking at the live streams of it, because it wasn't really that large. But if you make your bank window large, you'll be able to see your inventory, your worn equipment, and your beast of burden slots all at the same time. So that's point number one. Now, point number two that I want to drive home with this is that, yeah, as expected, we got new tabs, and you can actually customize the icons of all the tabs, so much so that you can choose any of the skills that are there, the quest icon, the overall icon, a stack of GP and a clue scroll for the icons.
You found something I didn't even find, man.
Yeah, you right-click customize on a tab and that happens.
Oh, sweet.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I didn't even find that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And if you right-click on the first tab of the bank rework, the tab with the infinity sign, you can toggle tab position to toggle tabs between the left and the right. The top and the left.
Oh, that's cool too.
Now, let's talk about what everybody has been, of course, most hoping for with this. And that is the placeholder system. So if you look,
it's all about.
If you look down at the bottom near where it says transfer, there's a button that right now is a cake, which I assume is going to change away from a cake. Because what this does is that when you withdraw an item, any item at all, it makes it so that it remains in your bank with a stack of zero and it's slightly shaded out. And this works for practically anything. And this is what people have wanted since day one of the bank rework. And I think we can, you know, effectively go on record and say this is what the bank rework was to many people. Placeholders.
This was one of the issues I had with the beta. So do you need to click on that cake for it so that if you withdraw, it will automatically leave a placeholder?
Correct.
Okay, because when I was taking items out, it wasn't leaving a placeholder unless I right clicked and said leave a placeholder. But yet when I would do it with presets, it would automatically do it. So I thought that was I didn't realize that I had to click the cake.
Yeah, the cake will do it automatically. And if you don't have the cake selected, you can right click and say withdraw placeholder, and it will withdraw everything minus the placeholder.
Boy, it's almost like we could have used a little, some little text bubbles or something to explain some of these new features.
Well, if you hover over the cake icon, it says, when withdrawing all items from a bank, leave a count of zero behind to retain the position in the bank. So there's a hover text on that one. Another thing that happens that people might not be aware of is that if you don't have the placeholder mode active and you withdraw an item, it's left with a dash, and this is a so-called empty slot.
I like that too, actually.
And the idea behind this is that you can just withdraw items, and then when you put your items back in place, they'll go into that first empty slot that's available, rather than just being, you know, at the top row of the first tab. Now, I also just want to say that, yes, this is a beta, and I haven't heard anything about any items being lost or anything to that effect, but the user interface that we see here, of course, is still subject to change. So if anybody has any issues with this, definitely contact Jagex, let them know, and let them know in a sane, civil manner.
I'm glad that I waited, because my only issue was just cleared up with some cake, like most things in life, and I don't have any issues now. None.
Well,
I'm really happy with it. Yeah.
And there's one more thing. You know what that is? Something amazing. Something that players...
Dynamic searching?
No, unfortunately not. We don't have that.
Okay.
If you have an Amulet of Glory, for example, or a Ring of Slayer, or a potion in a preset, and you withdraw that preset and you no longer have your X stack of that potion in your bank, or that ring, or that piece of jewelry, the bank will just withdraw the item that is nearest to that. So you always have something similar withdrawn. And this is a godsend for farming runs. For farming runs with the Juju farming potions. Because what I can do with this is I keep stacks of 3 Juju farming potions in my bank. So what will end up happening is that with my farming preset that has the seeds and the potions in it, it will ultimately just, you know, keep withdrawing that stack, that 3 stack one. Now, with that, it will also shift to a 1-dose potion if there's a 1-dose available. So suffice to say, I don't need to worry about my presets, so that I could just set a Juju farming potion 1 to be withdrawn, and it would just withdraw the nearest quantity to that was available. And, you know, thinking about it math-wise, that's probably the ones you want to do in your preset, because how often are you going to have a 1-dose potion in your bank and it will just withdraw the next fullest one, right? And this is better than creating a stack of, you know, 2 potions and 3 potions and whatnot if you're using 4-dose. So.
That's great. I didn't expect that to be included. Mm-hmm. I didn't even hear about it, actually, so
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and you know, that's the biggest one for me, because it's always annoying trying to sort these out. So, other things we have here, of course, the filters at the bottom, so you can activate cleanup filters, so you can see items right here that you can get from May's Quest Caravan, Diango skilling outfits, if you wanted to pick all these outfits up and destroy them. Apparently I have my hoe in my bank, which could sit in Diango's box as well, but that was part
of
my farming.
Damn, you keep your hoe in your bank?
Yeah, it was part of my farming outfit at one point.
I would assume she doesn't like that, does she?
Yeah. the garden hoe.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I know Shane's got hoes, so I didn't know if they were. And I didn't realize they're all your garden hoes.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. Other filters include members' items, non-members' items, worn equipment, which when you go there, it filters by slot. So if you want to see all your pocket items, you can see those too, which is surprising. I have that many pocket items.
Yeah, I don't think we realize all the stuff that you can actually put in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Tradable items, non-tradables, and finally, anything else that you have as your placeholders, you can see as well. And that's the filter. And then, of course, as we mentioned before and we knew was coming, the search is going to be really fast as well. So
yeah.
That's a bit of a rundown of how the bank rework beta works. You can compress it down to, you know, being the current size that it is, or you can make it much bigger. It's entirely up to you. You can access all your filters or your presets from the buttons at the bottom right of the bank. They make perfect sense that they're there. You got the bank pin options, costume room, and then Diango's box. Then it looks like this interface needs a bit of work, and this is, of course, the preset interface. It's aligned a bit odd, but, I mean, this is all, of course, work in progress, and you can see, you know, right off the bat what's being withdrawn and what's being saved, and you can change these by toggling the various radio buttons, as we call them in the industry. Those are those little round checkboxes, but you can see that with all the presets, and away you go. So there's also an option for exact matching with the presets, and when this is active, augmented items will only be loaded if their exact perks match.
Hmm. Maybe people had different perks on different, for different purposes.
Different hatchets, that kind of thing. So that would make sense.
Yeah.
But that's the preset interface, and then just click return to bank, and voila, there you are. So,
cool.
Do you have any questions about this? Because I got this up here, and sometimes the best way to go drill through these is to kind of do like a live hot take on this and see if we can break it or see if there's anything that you want me to find quickly. That's a good way of doing usability stuff sometimes.
Right. You know, the only – like I only had one question. That was about taking stuff out. I didn't want to have to like constantly right-click to leave my placeholders. So, mm-hmm. I mean – now that that's been solved, I mean, I really liked it. I didn't have any problems with it. It was a lot easier for me to use, a lot easier to see.
And
I could make it so much bigger.
Another thing that you might have been having a problem with is that down there at the bottom right, there's a presets tab and there's a transfer tab. Chances are that you might have been on the presets tab and not the transfer tab, so you didn't see the cake, because that's where the note button has been removed to as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? I wasn't exactly sure what those numbers were at the bottom, but I just figured those were like amounts of something you wanted to take out.
So that's a default number to withdraw. The default is 1. So if you change it to 10, you'll withdraw 10 of whatever item you click on.
Okay.
And there's also an X as well. So if you want to, you know, do herb lord by way of mouse clicking, you can do that through this too.
Gonna be efficient banking, Shane.
Yep, it's
just
very
think
nice.
What that can do to your herb lore rates.
I don't think I'll be training that again, because I mean,
oh, I guess yeah, you wouldn't.
Yeah,
it will definitely help mine.
Yeah. You know, the only downside I see of this is that, you know, everybody always organized their bank into rows, but now there's no set number of rows because you can resize the bank window.
Oh.
Right?
That's true. Yeah.
Because you can resize it horizontal, not just vertical.
Huh. I didn't even think about that, but I mean, it doesn't matter now because we've got placeholders.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And no, when was the last time someone took a bank screenshot?
Dude, all the time.
Oh, really?
Like, seriously? Oh, yeah, man. In a lot of discourse I'm in, people take pictures of loot tabs constantly.
Well, that's, a good reason for me to have a 27-inch display, because I can pretty much fit my entire bank on my monitor.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah, no, I was actually thinking like, oh, awesome. I hope people make their banks bigger so I can actually see their tabs that they're always putting pictures of. Yeah.
Yeah, I just made my bank as big as my entire monitor is, and it all fits on one screen.
That is awesome, and that is the first thing I'm doing when I go back into the beta.
Is taking a big, huge screenshot of your bank.
As big as it'll get.
Yeah, yep. I'm going to do that right now, actually. So, all right. Anything else on the bank rework beta? I mean, it looks really good. I mean, this is all obviously work in progress. Still needs some refining around the edges. I don't have any feature suggestions.
No, I mean, I was impressed. I mean, you can tell it's in a beta state, but I don't think it's going to be all that far off. Oh, I do have one thing. I do have a 100% full bank, and nothing was messed up. Like, it was fine.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know.
I wonder if there
I don't know how many people out there have a full bank.
Were any mess ups like that with anyone?
Yeah, mine was fine. So,
because that is, of course, the purpose of running this beta is as you get more people, you know, putting their fingers all over it, the chance more something is going to break.
Right, and I really want to encourage people to check this out because when I was in the beta, I only saw a couple people at the Combat Academy.
Well, you don't need to be at the Combat Academy to use the bank.
No, I know. Well, right, but I had hopped around. I just didn't see a lot of people in there. So check it out because you're going to love it. I think. I mean, I wouldn't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I do.
The only question I have is if we should be using this blue for the bank because there's nothing else this shade of blue in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you on that. But that background actually made it a little bit, it made it pop a little more than the traditional background. So
that makes sense.
It helped me. I liked it.
All right. Shall we move on to the combat beta? Cause I don't, like I said, I enjoy the bank beta.
Yeah.
The only question I'd have is if the blue is the right number, though it does make certain items pop more, which is good.
Yeah, I mean,
beyond that, it looks pretty good. So I think the message here is just steady as she goes. Keep up the good work on this. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's tab over to the combat beta then real quick. I'll keep this client up just in case it turns out that we need it to look at something. But the weapon diversity beta batch 2 is also here. And we went through most of these on the show previously when they were detailed on a live stream or something to that effect. So I don't know that there's much else to say on this except to head into the beta and have a look-see, see if you like the way this is shaking out. So
yeah,
anything for you that's jumping out on the combat side?
No, I will say, like, I think the concerns about the Battle Axe effect are pretty on par. I don't think it's really that good, which really breaks my heart because those are my favorite things ever. And I really wanted to use them again. But I when I was using them, I didn't notice much of a difference at all. And I'm thinking the reason I didn't notice a difference was as soon as I would have enough adrenaline for a threshold would fire.
Right.
And so I was never over the 80, you know, so like, yeah, it made sense. The only other thing that, you know, I just kind of want to throw out there for you non-combat types, this is a chance to go and try it and try combat risk-free, cost-free. This is better than practice mode because you're not even going to lose your supplies. Like, go there, try it, and you can, I don't know, I mean, I actually did some of that, and so
okay, where'd you go?
I tried to spider again. It went about as well as it did the first time, but that's okay. That's okay. Because I'm going to kill that thing someday. Someday. It's going to die. But I mean, I also wanted to go check Corp out with the new spear effect. And because I always used to go and do Corp. I don't know why. It was just one of the bosses I liked. And yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I did like that.
All right.
I was like, yeah, this is cool.
I'm just going to recap the melee effects quickly. So short sword, reduce your maximum hit damage by 1%, but increase your minimum hit damage by 3%, stacks to 2%. Reduce max and 6% increase min for dual wielding short swords. David was going to be here, but he had to pull out at the last minute because of a work commitment. He said that in the case of short swords, then if Kopeshes are to be considered short swords, giving them this natural equilibrium style of effect is pretty amazing, especially that if you're inside of a berserk mode, you're going to be above hit cap always half the time. So he's interested in that one.
And that was confirmed on the stream that they are short swords.
Oh wow. Okay. Okay then. That's pretty good then. Rapier-wise, chance for your abilities in combat to not incur a global cooldown on your next ability. 2% with a single rapier, 5% with dual-wielded rapiers.
Drygor rapiers, I think, would be the highest.
Right.
Because there are rapiers there.
Okay. That might be worth investing in. I like that special.
It's definitely worth a look. I mean, try it out in the beta, Shane.
Yeah. Hastas, ability to use two-handed weapon abilities while equipped. Okay. That's good, because, I mean, the rune Hasta is at tier 50, and I think that's the highest Hasta we have in-game right now. And, you know, what we need to say with this beta, and the sense I'm getting from the first one, is that the changes being made here are largely incremental, and that's also an assessment David agreed with. And, you know, we pointed this out last time, too, that the majority of these changes are going to impact mid-level players, which is where the bulk of the player base is, even though it doesn't feel that way. So that's good these changes are being made.
Yeah, I would like to see some higher level variants of some of these. Would be cool. Hasta especially, just because I wonder if that would make it easier for some tanks to be able to actually have their shield equipped. Ooh. and have the spear or the Hasta. I mean,
well, it's two-handed abilities, not shield ones, right?
Right, but a Hasta's one hand.
Right, but when most people are using shields for bossing, don't they just equip the shield and then go back to a two-handed or dual-wielded for more dupes?
Yeah, you're probably right. I wouldn't know, but I would think that like you could have both of your bars that way and use both of your bars at the same time.
Right.
Essentially.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, I think for Hastas, having that equipped and the ability to access two-handed weapon abilities, if we had a higher one and you paired this with a standard offhand, recall that when you're doing Slayer, the majority of the time you want to use AoE, but you don't get the good AoE abilities for melee, at least in my opinion, until you go to a full two-handed weapon ability with two-handed abilities, right? So if you could have, you know, a dual-wield set but have the two-handed abilities, I think that'd be pretty neat.
Oh, it would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Claws, when you wield claws in the main hand slot, 5% of damage given in a critical hit will be applied as extra damage over time that lasts for 7.2 seconds. While dual wielding claws, the damage is increased to 10%, and this is the current effect that was on the previous weapon beta for scimitars. And with that, the scimitar effect has been changed so that for every 5% of missing health on your target, you have a 0.5% increased critical hit chance, and the effect is doubled if you're dual-wielding scimitars. So at 5% health on the target, the player should have a 9.5% chance to critically strike. That's pretty amazing. Would increase to 19% if you had two scimitars.
I'm trying to think of the highest scimitar.
Well, there's tier 92 ones.
You can,
there's tier 92 ones you can test in the beta. There's tier 92 of everything in the beta.
I wonder if that means they'll come. You think they'll come?
Eventually. I mean, all they need to do is bring more bosses out, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there was talk on the live stream this week that they're going to be unveiling the next endgame boss at RuneFest.
Is that what that meant?
Yeah, that's what it meant.
I thought they were going to throw a bag over Osborne's head and drag him off to the side. Be like, shit. Stay on the new boss, eh?
Warhammer's basic abilities and auto attacks now hit all enemies around the target you're attacking. So this turns Warhammers into AoE area of effect weapons for basic and auto attacks.
Okay.
I don't know where you'd use that. And now we get to the point of the beta where I feel that, you know, these changes weren't really necessary because Magic is already diverse enough with the different spell types and the fact you can four ticket. So for Magic Staves, your ultimate abilities can no longer miss. And when you cast an ultimate ability, you gain 5% accuracy for 20 seconds with a staff. It seems a little bit overpowered.
With the way things are, I don't know. There was a time when accuracy was everything. And
right.
Now
it's not really
it's
on the
not,
high-end PVM
so,
stuff.
Yeah. I just don't want to talk out of school because this isn't my school.
Yeah. It would have been good to have David here for this section in particular. For wands, critical strikes reduce the cooldown of magic abilities by 1 second. You feel the same way I do about that one?
I don't know how you feel.
I think it might be too much.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because there was a time when there were some magic abilities that were OP. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Gosh, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to agree with you and say,
you know what
that
I'm going to do after this?
This on the magic side,
you know what I'm
going to
do after
it.
This? After we're done here, I'm going to go tonight and kill Glacers with my old magic wand and orb setup and see how this goes. Because, I mean, if we're reducing the abilities of magic or the cooldowns of magic abilities by 1 second whenever we crit and we can pop thresholds more often, that's just going to make killing Glacers, one example, much faster. Orbs, 5% chance to save the runes spent when your chosen spell effect occurs. In addition, we are making the normal spellbook spell spend runes when their effect happens to be consistent with the ancient spellbook, so when they hit the target.
But that's only on an auto attack, right? Because abilities don't even use runes?
Correct.
I feel like this was added because
the community wanted it added.
I get that. I mean, magic is what you. I mean, that's the go-to style. That's what you're going to be using on the high, you know, on the elite side. I think the second one in particular,
the critical hit one.
Yeah. I mean, I like the staff because I don't think you should miss with the ultimate anyway.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I just don't think that should happen anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. And I don't think accuracy is as important as it used to be in like the era of Nex type of, you know, bosses. So I guess I'm willing to let that one, you know, go or whatever.
Books, 10% multiplicative increased chance for your spell effects to occur.
That sounds interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, do you want to give up that damage from an orb to take a book instead?
My guess is a PVMer would not.
Yeah, but maybe if you're doing Slayer, you do.
I mean, maybe. I don't really look for the only spell effect I ever look for is from like blood spells.
Yeah.
Because you get that little bit of heal.
Yep.
So I guess this would be good if you're trying to get some heal.
Yeah, there's that one. Also, remember that the elemental spells had their effects added to them in the first beta. Air, when you hit with magic and you're using air, you'll gain a stack which increases your total armor by 1%. Fire spells, 5% chance when hitting anything that you'll get an extra combustibility. That's massive.
Oh, so these...
So this is making these
two
things,
layers. Yeah, these are
this
two
is making
layers.
The elemental effects from last beta activate more if you have a book. And that's why I brought these back up, because the water one, when you first deliver a finishing blow, a water globule spawns where the target was, and when you walk on that tile, the globule is removed and the player is healed for 2% of their max health.
That's what you guys meant by we already have spells. They already did spells.
Yeah,
that's
did.
What you guys meant. Yep. That makes – okay.
Earth spells, when your target is stunned or bound, you deal 20% more damage to them. But that has been nerfed down to 10% in this beta.
You know, I think we probably need to pick one or the other.
As in add it to the to the magical sticks or add it to the spells?
Yeah.
I would say add it to the magical sticks, because that way then people who are using ancients aren't penalized.
And it's more uniform with what the weapon diversity has been. But otherwise, then you're given the magic's getting two layers, and that that is contrary to what you're trying to do by diversifying the styles anyway. So yeah, I think we need to pick one. I don't think we can go with both.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. And for ranged, they are doing darts and javelins. Darts will deal 5% or 10% of dual wielding more damage to poison targets.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it fits in a certain play style for using poison and darts and whatnot. And it kind of, I think, fits with the assassin style, which is nice too if you wanted to build like an assassin kind of loadout.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. I don't know what bosses are even affected by poison. Hardly any of them, I think. But boy, you could put like think about it, like Cinderbane gloves. There's ways you could totally try to make that kind of a build.
And I think that's where this weapon diversity project is shining.
Yeah.
So, javelins hits all targets between the player and your target for 100% of the damage dealt to the primary target. So if you throw a javelin at a target 5 squares away, dealing 1,000 damage, and there were 2 NPCs in line between the player and that target, they would be hit for 1,000 damage in addition to the primary target. So they effectively fly through your target.
Yeah. There's not going to be a lot of situations where this is great, but I mean, if you're dealing
with a
big
to javelins.
Mob.
Because, yeah. You know, I had a stack of rune javelins. Or no, I think that was Mike that had a stack of rune javelins on the Grand Exchange for, you know, upwards of a year plus, and they never sold at minimum price.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So, javelins are definitely the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, that's for sure. Jeez.
All right, some other quick changes. The mall effect has been added to the Pterosaur Mall. We were afraid of this, weren't we?
Yeah, I didn't think it needed that.
No, +5 tiers of damage and -5 tiers of accuracy.
And then how does that affect when you're going up against a ranged target? Like, I don't think that was necessary.
Yeah.
But maybe they just wanted to add it to see just how bad it would be.
So this thing has a tier 80 damage value on its own. So this takes it up to tier 85. But in doing so, you're going down to tier 75 accuracy with this maul. Keep that in mind.
Right.
And add in a 12.5% damage boost against ranged class enemies and that 10% hit chance on top of tier 85 instead of tier 80. The Pterosaur Maul becomes a really special weapon. And I swear, I thought that they weren't going to add it on to, you know, things like the Hex
and
the Pterosaur.
They said they weren't. Yeah, no, they made that claim in the stream. Was it last week? Week before?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. I don't know if that's needed. Shield bows.
Well, this
now,
is a beta. So
yeah, yeah.
We'll find out, right?
Why we're sounding off on it. Yeah. Shield bows require less adrenaline to activate, but the cost remains unchanged. So threshold can now be triggered at 40% and will still cost 15%, and an ultimate can be triggered at 80% if you're using shield bows.
Okay.
I think that's an interesting effect because you also get the shield abilities with it. But like most other things here, I'm struggling to find a use case for it. But when you look at the mid-tier combat requirements and what people are fletching, I think it makes sense.
It makes sense. The only time I've ever seen shield bows used is I see people take dark bows out in the wilderness so that they can do their defense abilities. And, you know, in case they get attacked.
Is a dark bow a shield bow? I thought it was a...
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, it's a shield bow.
Okay.
I've literally seen my friend... I've watched a friend of mine get attacked and keep doing defense abilities and just totally troll the person that was PKing him until they left. Because, I mean, that was his thing. He was a tank. Like, everywhere he went, he would, you know, be the tank. And so, like, it was so funny. It was just so – and he would do that. Oh, what's that one? The reflect where they hit themselves. So he's doing damage to this guy. He was never even laid a hand on him, you know. He's like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? I'm like – oh, it was so good. So good.
Oh, that's great. All right. Spears, the boost is now 40% longer. The spear, this was always due to the rounding, but they've changed it to be exactly 40% reflect what was happening. I don't understand what that means, so I'm going to look up what the spears were doing. All bleeds effects now last 50% longer, so it's been changed to 40%.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
They made the mace pair bonus that we talked about that we knew needed to happen, so that's good. For those who weren't here, prayer bonus was reduced to 150% for the main hand and 50% for the offhand, so in dual wielding, 200% only, which is still rather good. Still really good. Throwing axes, attacks now have a 5% chance to bind your target for 3 seconds, and if your target is bind immune, you will deal 10% more damage, and as we talked about, Earth Spell's damage boost has been reduced by 10%. All in all, I think the changes are good. We need to do a bit more research into the magic side to see whether we want it on the spells or the sticks, because otherwise, I mean, that seems like it's a bit too much. But anyways, that's just us. I think that's my take on it. And all in all, these changes are good, especially for the mid-level section where most of the people are in the combat side, which, to be honest, you forget about, I forget about, and pretty much everyone north of 90 forgets about.
I forgot myself, and I have an account that is in those levels. You know when I figured it out? When we were dungeoneering, like I would walk into a room and just get clobbered. I'm like, oh crap, I can't even make it from room to room because they were all geared to your guys' level. So like, I was getting annihilated left and right. which I wasn't used to. Like I'm used to walking around and you know whatever. Like you know, but yeah, it was an actual thing that night. I'm like, oh, that hurt.
All right. Well, there's our two betas for the week. I think we can move on to the live stream right now, the general Q&A live stream. And once again, Tycho has put together a masterful set of notes on this for this. So thank you once again for that. And we're just going to kind of go through some of our highlights here. We're not going to go through the entire thing. I think the first thing that was brought up and the biggest point was the player-owned farm nerf in particular. They have seen what works and what doesn't work in the perspective of the players. They're currently playtesting another iteration of it, but they're not prepared to announce anything number-wise yet. And the blog post that went out last week was the hardest nerf that they were willing to take, and they were expecting some pushback on that, which, of course, they did get.
Sounds about right.
So do you think, with that being said, that the people who are getting their knickers in a knot about this, had an impact, or was it always the intention to pull back?
I think the intention was probably to pull back, but they needed to see what people was going to have the biggest problems with.
Yeah.
Had we not brought that up, then they wouldn't have had the information that they needed. So I think it was a good thing.
Yes.
Look, there is a time when community outrage is unnecessary, but there is also times when it's very helpful. Like, because they're the people playing the game, you know?
Yeah.
And
I'm gonna have more to say on this in a couple weeks too, especially in relation to the player owned farm. You know what I'm talking about, Tannis?
I think so.
Yeah. So watch this space for more on this. And if you read my Informer article too this month at informer.rsbnb.com, you can read between the lines and maybe see where I'm headed on this. So I don't think there's much else to say about the farm nerf until we get the actual data of what it's going to be. So unless you have any new stuff you want to bring forward since last week.
I honestly think we did a very good job last week covering it, and this is exactly what I would have expected.
Yeah, it's like that screenshot Photoshop job you sent me. Well, I forget what it said.
So good.
Get those rates out of here.
You know who that was, right?
Yeah, it was the president.
Okay. Yeah, at a rally. Get them out.
All right. Question, of course, came up in relation to the comp cape, 120 capes, max capes, 200 mil capes, achievement capes, rune score capes, reaper capes, any kind of cape under the sun, and in particular anything that might have been in relation to the complicated comp rework. Mod Osborne talking on this said, not at the moment. There's no plans to do any more achievement capes, though, that the whole of the comp cape rework means that we can now look at capes as a viable reward space, and they'll see new capes arriving from drops from PVM. And that's where they're going to go first with this. And, you know, this was largely as expected, but later on in another question, they did say that 120 achievement capes and meta capes could ultimately be looked at.
Yeah. Because they got what they
wanted.
Yes.
Which was this next point is that, you know, are you guys happy with the comp cape rework considering you went into overhaul and the way it turned out? And, you know, with this, Mod Osborne's very happy with this because his whole purpose of doing this and pushing this update forward was that they wanted the teams to be unafraid to add requirements and achievements to the capes, and they got that, and they're very happy about it. And this, you know, this highlights the differences in pictures of, you know, the players got the nice thing of having all the teleports available and the passives available, but at the same time, the players wanted something else entirely different from it. But we see here, this is the main thing that Jagex wanted. And, you know, recall from the first time we ever talked about the comp cape rework, what did I say?
Yeah, we did a nibble about this.
Yeah, I said that, you know, the most important thing from a design perspective is freeing up the ability to add new capes to the game. And lo and behold, I was right.
Yep. And I said we needed a simple one.
And that's what we got.
That's what we got.
And we took a little bit of pain, but we got there.
Yeah. Yeah.
When can we expect a continuation of Desperate Times? We were hoping that would be this August, but it's not going to be because the design is written up. Mod Jack is writing it, so it's technically in production. And they might be talking about this in a couple sessions at RuneFest.
I'm guessing that's where it's going to come up. I mean, look, it's Anachronia themed. And
yeah.
I mean, that just makes sense, right?
Yeah. And of course, Mod Raven cracked up because it's like, yeah, of course you could guess the name of the quest. Desperate Measures, because you have Desperate Times and Desperate Measures. At least that's my sense of what it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Did you catch in chat that someone said Desperate Housewives?
Yeah, and then they started talking about Desperate Housewives. Yeah.
That was a show of the mid-2000s, I believe, right?
Yeah, it had a bunch of, ladies. And I think, I don't remember all their names, but Mon Osborne seemed to remember him quite well.
Oh, that's too funny. Are there plans for construction rework? You know, this one always comes up, and he said
it sounded more promising, though.
Yeah, it did, because it's actually going to be in the annual survey, and in particular details of how they could go about it. And team-wise, internally, this is one of the biggest updates that the team would most like to do.
Oh, see, they want to do it. We want it. Come on.
It's just a question of putting something so big on the schedule, you know?
Well, you know what I want? I want them not to be afraid of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is something that's been like years.
We've been bouncing this back and forth, you know, schedule, Menafos, construction, everything always comes down to schedule. And it's a question of whether the players want to give stuff up. One year they said yes, and we got expansions, and you see how that turned out. And now players want bigger updates again after M&S, so.
Well, players got I mean, I actually wasn't in this group, but I think a lot of people did get confused between the schedule change and the content that came out at that particular time itself.
You're talking about Menafos, right?
Menafos, yeah, because Menafos wasn't all that great received. And the time running up to Menafos, there was little things, and they weren't anything really, you know, like
they
great
were patch
or
weeks
anything.
Plus.
Right, so I think that just collared the name expansions for the players.
Yep.
I think there's this convergence of those two things going on.
And, you know, as we've talked about many times before, often the actual messaging doesn't matter. It's about the perception that the players get.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, because if you look at this most recent edition with Anachronia, it's every bit the expansion that Menafos was.
Yep.
Essentially.
Yep.
Had they packaged the quest with it, it would have been exactly about the same.
It would have been an expansion, yeah. Can you guys release the totem piece chances? Yes. Totem piece chances for Land Out of Time are coming.
Good. Good, good.
All right. Here's the big one.
Bagan.
The big one. Bagan. The big important one.
The big one.
So, who is on the Skilling Council, and can their function be introduced one day? That question is from yours truly.
Ooh, nice job.
Thank you. Thank you. We needed to get this one out, especially after last week, I think.
I think so. Well, I mean, I love it. I think I prompted Shane into, like, damn it, I'm going to find out. I'm going
to
know.
And if it didn't get answered here, I would have taken other steps to get that answer too. So. But anyways, the answer from Mod Timbo on this one, their function is similar to the Combat Council in that they are a collection of top skiller-focused J-Mods who have the skiller's intentions, best intentions at heart, and they discuss changes to the game in relation to skilling. They talked about the player-owned farm nerf and what form it should take. They were also involved in the skilling aspect of Anachronia. Some of the mods on this team, of course, include Mod Timbo, which is excellent, Mod Sova, Mod Aerator, Mod Tomb. Mod Tomb worked on the mining and smithing rework, so that's nice. Mod Mylea, and they had one other they couldn't remember the name of, so they just called them Mod Weapon Diversity.
Ah, okay. I looked these people up. Because this was, you know, this is important.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, I couldn't figure out how. I mean, I don't know what their like RS names are, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they are at Skillion or this or that. Doesn't really matter. Because I'm glad to find out we actually have one, because we've heard that, but they would never, and they never put them forward. The fact that they were involved in the farming nerf kind of makes me a little bit worried about how. I mean, I don't know. That worries me a little bit. But
it makes actually total sense to me, and here's why. because when you're approaching this from the perspective that you have all the data beforehand and you're trying to fix a problem, you start with what is most absolutely definitely going to fix the problem. But this is, you know, and anybody who's, you know, looked at modern leadership methodologies knows something called pacing and leading. And what this news post did last week, and I think we're going to see it having this effect when the next farming post comes out, because not everybody watches the live streams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what the first news post did is it effectively paced the community to effect, and Jagex met them on this with this live stream, and they're going to meet them on it with the next dev blog about the player-owned farm nerf. The players were primed to expect a major nerf to the player-owned farm with this last blog, okay? But if they pull back in the next blog that comes out, and it's not nearly as bad, it's something that is both acceptable to Jagex, and it's better for the players. Jagex have effectively, in this case, pulled off the player-owned farm nerf successfully, if they can meet the players at a point where it's acceptable to both. And,
yeah, I mean, that just depends. I mean, you know, the devil's in the details,
right,
on that.
Right, and, you know, with the Skilling Council being involved in that and having all the details behind it, you would rather them being making that choice than someone else.
Well, yes, but I want to draw people's attention to this a little bit. So we just now found out who these people are, right?
Sure.
Okay. I want to talk about what makes the Combat Council so effective. Number one, they are very proficient at combat, right? Makes sense, right? They are good. They are really good. They can all do the top tier bosses in this game. They know what they're talking about. On top of that, people communicate with them on Twitter, right? And they're communicating back and forth.
And that's why I wanted to highlight this, is because I wanted to bring these people forward. So for anybody who is concerned about this like we are, we can reach out to these people.
Right. And so that's what I wanted to say. Like, one, I would love to know, like, how good at scaling they really are. But beside the point, at least we know who they are, and at least we can, talk to them and advocate for ourselves. Now, I don't know how you're going to feel about this. I'm guessing you're not going to like it. But I want to throw it out there anyway, okay, Shane?
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I think could tie up years of just back and forth, just stuff that we could fix with this one thing, okay? Remember how we did, like, the player, the labs where players were writing in? Yeah, I know, but you remember how they wanted that kind of interaction back and forth a little bit?
Yeah.
And we're doing the polling now and this and that.
Yeah.
All right. Do you know how in, like, Germany they actually have, like, a worker on the board who is a worker?
Right.
What if, and this would work with all the councils that they have, because they have one for lore, they have one for combat, they have one for skilling. So all of those, what if there was one player representative signed to an NDA? No, signed to an NDA, just like anyone that would be player tested. And they're one vote out of five, but at least you know that that perspective would be represented, and that they were being represented. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea in theory. I think where it falls down, though, is that I'm going to use an analogy. It's like someone important trying to flush a toilet without everyone noticing. If they did this, that person's name would eventually come out.
Well, yeah, we could vote on them if we wanted, on who we wanted to send there, who our elective representative would be. But this is like democracy.
I guess.
But it's more like it's kind of like it's democracy in a republic kind of model.
Yeah,
like we're sending
it's
our
almost like having a it's like having a vote on the board, basically.
Essentially. Yeah. But I'm saying, you know, like NDAM, do all that stuff. Don't let it leak or whatever. We just know that we would have representation that way for sure. I don't know. It was an idea I've been working on for the last few days when I heard this with the council, because I thought, you know, I'm really glad that they're there, because I, for one, didn't believe that they were there. We had never seen them. So I'm glad to know that. But I was like, how could we do this where the players got input, but it wasn't outsized input? It was just the right amount. And that's kind of what I came up with.
Yeah. Another thing they talked about was doing maybe a mail out from the various councils through email lists. Like, what is the Combat Council working on? What is the Lore Council working on? What is the Skilling Council working on?
Right. Oh, and I do have, like, I was wondering this too, man. Is it, because this can go either way, so you're going to have to convince me of your position, because this kind of goes either way. But is having Mod Timbo on there a good thing? He's the balancer. He is the game balancer. Like, so do you want the game balancer in a position of advocating for anything whatsoever?
Aren't they more just like the judge? Maybe the game balancer should be not within any council, but just kind of hovering on the periphery of all of them.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like maybe he shouldn't really be on any of these councils, because, you know, I mean, I have huge respect for what Mod Timbo does.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, I just, you know, I think that would be a very...
It's not an easy job.
Like a weird position.
You know, these game studios, and I'm wondering if Jagex does this. I've seen ads out there for game studios hiring people with degrees in econometrics to look at things.
Huh.
Aha. Uh-huh. And for anybody wondering, econometrics is basically the science of putting math and statistics behind economics.
You just blew people's mind. You know that. You know most people think that economics is math. They don't realize that it's a philosophy.
Yeah.
It's actually one of your liberal arts, people.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why when I was taking third, fourth year economics, and it was like, oh, we could do this with calculus too. And I looked it up, and I'm gonna do this problem with calculus, and I'm gonna do it in a different way, in a more efficient way. And yeah, it turned out got the same answer. And I'm going off on a tangent here, aren't I? But suffice to say, doing economics with a bit of calculus thrown in provides an entirely different perspective on it, and you can learn some extra stuff along the way.
Very cool.
Any updates on Stone Spirits? Yeah, there's more work in progress to make them more valuable, because, you know, the last attempts we saw to kind of increase the drop rates of them and make them more useful really didn't impact on the smithing side of it. You know, of course, making smithing more be more fruitful and make more people want to do smithing, you know, with the auto heater changes and whatnot. That didn't work there, so they're going to be doing some more on that. Files, so I think that's good. And, you know, we said a couple months after they'll reveal whether or not it's working, and here we are. And I think we had the sense that it wasn't, right?
Yeah, we did. I mean, and I think we both – well, I don't know. I don't know if you were with me when I said just take them out, because I don't think they're serving
the purpose.
Yeah,
that's what the PVN crowd wants as well. And I mean
– Oh, really?
Yeah, David wants them gone because he finds them a burden for drops.
Oh, well, there we go. I disagreed with the PBM community. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, they are kind of at least the lower ones, man. Just get rid of them. I don't know. Get rid of them.
The last big question, actually, the second last big question, will Jagex ever consider introducing mounts? And, you know, we're not talking about it because this is going to be the big thing. It's what came from this, and you know, it's that, you know, the game is designed for a 1x1 character grid, and run speed is the fastest players can move. And there was this, you know, offhanded comment by Mod Osborne that's like, yeah, we'd have a much easier time if we could actually just rebuild this game from scratch.
That's what needs to happen.
Don't say that.
It'll never happen.
Because,
but that's what,
you know, if you say this, you're going to get the Reddit community going, and you're going to get RuneScape Remastered thing going again.
I know, but think about this, Shane. Think about this. How much time do they lose because they're struggling with a 20-year-old legacy? Like, if they stopped, if they developed a game,
it would be a 2 to 3 year project.
Yes, exactly. But every other studio does it. Like, they could do it. I mean, if we could keep people calm, but think of what we could have. Like, this is what I'm saying. Think of what you could have. Like, you could have so much. You could do anything. Like, what if it was modern? Like, really? If they redid it, you could have a mount. If they redid it, you could walk around with your, I don't know, WASD, like a normal game. Like, you could do all of that stuff. You know what? Well, if you start over, you can make your XP rates from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
See, mm-hmm. Like, there's way more upside.
Yeah, there is. There is. But, like most things, it comes down to what do you do with RS3 in the meantime?
Well, you let it chill and let people do what they do, right?
I mean, could you really go 2.5, 3 years without an update?
Well, yeah, okay.
And see, that's what it would come down to.
But how many people would it take to give us a medium-sized quarterly update?
Medium-sized quarterly update. You would need three teams for that.
Three teams?
Yeah, because there's going to be overlap, and you want the quarterly updates to come out, right? So you're going to have one at various different stages, and with four quarters a year, that allows for some overlap, but not too much overlap. So I think it would be three teams to have one coming out, you know, regularly every quarter, right?
Like a 3 or 4 person team?
Probably five-person team.
Five-person
team. I think their teams are of 5 to 7, I think.
I was just thinking of, like, could this be managed with, you know, if they hired more people to be able to do – I don't know. Hey, you know what? There's been an unannounced thing in the background for a while now.
Yeah, that's kind of gone quiet recently, hasn't it? Mod Ollie, Mod Deg, Mod Mark. All those folks are on that.
Yeah, but I was appreciative that Mod Osborne said it. When I heard that, once again, I'm messaging
Chad. Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear what he said?
Anybody who works on a project that is legacy, and we even see these issues with the RSBNB website, it's like, oh, God, we did this code back in 2004, yet it's still running on our main page. It would be nice to redo this, but we're working on other things. So,
right. I just think that it would save them time in the long run, and it would save them money in the long run, and there's so much being lost just because of it being difficult. And every other question, like when you ask, can we have this? No, it's too hard. It's too big of a job, man. It's too much work. But it wouldn't be too much work if they didn't have to deal with 20 years of legacy code. Like, we could have more. It would just be 2 years of pain.
Yeah.
But, man.
And, you know, the construction rework, the player model rework, this one is obviously bouncing around people's heads as well of what could be done. And, you know, there's engine changes and whatnot on the docket too. So I as much as we'd like it, I don't know that it's actually the best decision to make. Like, I'm with you on that it would be nice to see, but there's just so much that would go into it that we'd lose the weekly cadence of updates, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's 100%. There's no way around that.
I'm ready to move on to the final question. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Any information about the Gnome finale or Arpasandra? And, you know, once again, was pointed to the annual survey. They feel that areas players want eventually get ticked off the list. So Prif, Menaphos, Fossil Island. They think the next one people will want will be Floor 61.
Well,
wasn't Floor 61, the idea of Floor 61 kind of eviscerated with Dishonor Amongst Thieves?
Because it's under Demonheim, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's the 61st floor.
Yeah, I guess.
It could be deeper. You know what I mean? Like, so they could fudge their way around that. But I don't think that's what people. That's why Dungeoneering is winning in the most popular unpopularity contest. So I highly doubt that's what people want.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet, Maud Osborne bet £20 that Agility will pull ahead. So. Alrighty, folks, there's your live stream for the week. Not too much else left to say RuneScape-wise this week, but you can head on over to the main webpage and vote for the Golden Gnome finalists, in particular, video awards for Best New Video Maker, Best New OS Video Maker, Best RuneScape Video Maker, Best OS Video Maker, RS Video of the Year, OS Video of the Year. There's also streaming awards, a whole smorgasbord of people that you can choose from that'll suit your fancy. And then, of course, a new art award categories on this. And Best New RuneScape Artist. I actually know one of these is a member of Clan Quest, Brassica Prime. So we'll be definitely watching that one out there too. So, but the survey is up for voting on this. And I also just like to mention on this that last week, of course, we had a discussion on this, and we had a discussion on this in our Discord server at rsbnb.com/discord. And Mod Porky noticed that, and you know, I just wanted to thank him for reaching out. I think we all had a good discussion with him on this. So I feel better about the Golden Gnomes this week than I did last week. So thank you, Mod Porky.
Yeah, I appreciated that too. And I thought, didn't you think it was kind of cute how everyone was like, I don't know if I want to be the first to say anything. I don't know.
I think I was the first.
No.
Who was the first?
Me.
Oh, you were.
Yeah, me and you were like right there. Okay. I mean, of course we were right. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. So, yeah. And then other people started chiming in. But we broke the ice.
Indeed. All right. Speaking of breaking the ice, tomorrow we're going to be recording something called the Monthly Bit, and we're going to be breaking the ice on 15-plus years of the RuneScape soundtrack with this monthly bit. So thank you to the community for letting us do this one. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, this is in regards to our Patreon support page, which you can find at patreon.com/rsbnb. And there you can support the podcast if you want. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the whole back catalog of monthly bits, upwards of a year of them now. You also get early access to the show notes, ability to join our round tables that we do in the middle of the month, the ability to vote on the monthly bit, and of course you help fund the costs of hosting and production of the show. We also have a $3 tier where you can get a special VIP rank on Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show for the times we play music on them. And at $5 a month, you get a shout-out every week, and you get exclusive access to those clips that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. So that's a very coveted reward tier, and we're halfway through the year, so a bit of time left to go on that one. And of course, I mentioned our monthly bit bonus show that we're doing this month on the RS soundtrack. We also got interviews with the hosting and production team. Tycho's up this month. And of course, the roundtable recorded in the middle of the month. That is a topic of discussion on anything and everything RuneScape related. And, you know, should we ever reach that mystical 99 $1 a month tier. It'll be movie night in the RSBNB Discord, where we watch some of our favorite movies. And yeah, Star Trek will be there. Hopefully, we'll get there by the time that the new Star Trek Picard series arrives.
Oh, God. I don't know how many times I've watched that trailer. I even made my wife watch the trailer.
You know, we always keep going back to that trailer for this Patreon spot. So I don't know if that's going to sell more tiers or what it's going to do.
Oh, yeah,
but it's
know.
Definitely something that we're interested in focusing on. So,
yeah.
But, you know, patreon.com/RSBNB if you want to sign up for this and help out. And, you know, this week I'd like to thank in particular for supporting us Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Tom V, Zachary K, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support to the podcast. It truly means the world to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to our questions now. We got two of them this week. The first one this week is from Judgment's Guard. So with the summer skill off tokens being used so rapidly, is it better to go gather thousands of the tokens before going to the crater and spending a shorter time per day, or spend longer at the crater without gathering the tokens first? You know, the answer is it's what you want, to be honest, I think. If you're interested in that Dungeonaria XP that you get from the token, I'd say get your tokens first and then head on to that hole. Whereas if you just want to go there and get your daily tokens and you're not too concerned about getting extra XP, you might as well just go to the crater first, I think. I think that's the way to split this down the middle, right?
Yeah, that's probably what I would say too. Unless if there is a particular skill that you're wanting to train, say you're trying to train the Dungeonarian, or you're trying to train the agility, you might be better off to get just doing what you normally do and getting your tokens and then turning those into the mystery boxes, converting them. You might get more bang for your buck, is what I'm saying. Efficiency wise.
Right, but if you convert them to mystery boxes, you don't progress through the event.
Yeah, that's true. So you won't get your snack yak, but you may not have to do as many laps or as many floors. So, you know, this is basically whatever you want. If it was me, I gather my tokens before I would go down there.
Yeah,
that's my personal preference.
That's my personal preference for this one, too. I would say that, you know, if you weren't really concerned about the XP, just spend the shorter amount of time per day. And, you know, I think that's just the way the event is designed, that the more time you put in, the more investment you put in, the better the payout's going to be.
Yep.
So I think that's a nice way of slicing it down the middle. So gather the tokens first and then go to the crater for that time period. And, you know, this event's only around for 5 more days as of yesterday, so it's a short one. It's not a 14-day one, so there's going to be lots of questions if people are actually going to be able to complete the whole thing. So, I don't know. Personally, I'm going to go with the first option, and I'm not too concerned about the XP, but that's just the way I play the game. Thank you, Judgment Guard. That question was sent in via Twitter at RSBNB. So if you guys want to send them in through there, you can just at mention us or DM us and we'll get the question. Next one from Sunset Fish. Knowing what you know about the game now, what is something you wish you could go back into your early RuneScape days and change how you played? For me, it would be to keep all my resources to sell them to players, not to an NPC at the general store.
God, there's so much. There's so much. If I could have done things differently, I would have learned to be much more proficient in combat and made money in order to make my skilling more of what I like to do when I'm skilling,
okay.
Essentially. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I like getting that just best in slot kind of rate and stuff, and that's usually the most expensive, you know, option. which it's really kind of hard if you're just making money through skilling or something like that. Like it's kind of hard to sustain that. So
yeah,
I would have liked to have been better at combat.
Ever since farming came out, all of my money I made for skilling has been done by farming, largely.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. A couple of clue scroll rewards here and there, maybe a kick on Slayer or two, but all largely through farming.
Well, you also like to farm you were there around for the times when Sarah Bruce were just stupidly high and... Uh-huh. You know, and you capitalize on
all that.
And you
can still make money on Toad Flax today, even with them being lower.
Oh, wow.
Oh, of course you can make money on Toad Flax in this day and age. Oh, yeah. It's the easiest one to make money off of. Because the seed is only 1,700 GP, and you're going to get, you know... you're going to get, on average, you know, if you're not fully kitted out, you're going to get around 7, whereas that goes up to about 8.5 if you are fully kitted out, herbs per run. And one Toad Flax herb is going for 5.8K. So you just need to have the patch survive.
I need to start doing farming again. I need to start doing my runs again. I haven't done any since I got killed in the wild yet the patch. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Cerebrew is going for 5,800 GP each. But, you know, you're just interested in the Toad Flax primarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. My highest run record ever was 142. And
Still doing your grapes?
Oh, I don't do grapes.
Oh, I thought you used to do
that. No, I don't do grapes because the seeds are too expensive. And I don't like the random roll of whether you're going to get the Ceridoman ones, which is the ones you want, or the Zamorak ones or the Guthix ones. So the herb runs are just easier. And, you know, that run that was 142 was 823K made in an hour and a half. Now, more optimally, you're going to be hovering around 90 to 100 per run. And, you know, at current price, that's 551K. Do that 3 times a day. 1.5 mil.
Not bad.
Zero effort.
Not bad for 15 minutes of work.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But as for me, getting back to the question, I wish the keepsakes came out sooner so I could have keepsaked my untrimmed farming cape.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. That would have been nice.
Yeah. Because that was my first 99, and I got subsequent 99s, but the cape was trimmed. And, you know, there's something special about an untrimmed cape, right? I think today, in 2019, untrimmed capes of accomplishment, regular ones, are more special than regular capes of accomplishment.
Yeah, they're like so special that, I went back like and did that, it again.
Like seeing that untrimmed Slayer cape, seeing that untrimmed runecrafting cape, right?
Untrimmed construction cape.
There you go. There you go. So that would be my main one. I would say I've done it fairly well, and I made this change probably around 2012 or so, where I just took the attitude when it came to XP and completing things that I don't care because it's a case of burning out. And that's the key for doing this show, is that you want to keep doing it, but you don't want to burn out. And that was perhaps the most impactful change that I made. So hopefully those are good answers to those questions. If you guys want to send in your own questions, email questions@rsbnb.com, or you can, of course, leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb. And we'll look forward to seeing more of your questions next week. So moving on into tech news this week, interesting story I came across. It's not necessarily something that Apple did, but looking at quarterly results and fiscal year results, where Apple goes after the iPhone is something that's become more realistic to see in terms of looking at this, because this week Apple announced its third quarter results on July 30th. Its year ends in September. And, you know, for the first time since 2012, the iPhone accounted for less than 50% of Apple's quarterly revenue.
Okay.
And with that, Apple's revenue on total just barely grew for the quarter year over year. And, you know, Apple's revenue has been going down. So they did grow from where they were last year in this quarter. But on the same side of things, it raises questions about where the company is going forward. And if you look at, you know, the newest releases in terms of iOS 13 and macOS Catalina, you can see that the company is focusing on the services, in particular the app stores, the games, Apple TV Plus, the subscription news service that we talked about when that came out. Of course, there's also Apple Pay. And then, of course, we can't also forget the Apple credit card that's going to be debuting very soon as well. So this is something that's going to be bringing in more and more money for Apple over time, so much so that Apple brought in over $11 billion this quarter in terms of revenue for its services industry. So, and, you know, when you compare that to other companies out there, this is the equivalent of something that a Fortune 100 business would be happy for doing. So it's certainly interesting to see where they're going with this. And this is something that also points to Tim Cook's leadership and the way he has taken Apple, is that I don't think we'd ever say this, but sales in the accessories categories at Apple grew by 50% over the last year. And this includes Beats headphones, AirPods, HomePods, and the Apple Watch, which is kind of astounding when you think of it, because nobody ever thought that this category of wearables and home accessories would be a booming business, right? But lo and behold, here we are. It's what drove growth over the past year. So
I guess you have to have your earbuds, whatever.
AirPods, yeah.
AirPods, yeah. I mean, you can't use anything else.
Yeah. And of course, those are the wireless ones too, the ones that have, you know, for some reason become a fashion trend when it costs you $99 to replace one if you somehow lose it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can pay the 200 odd bucks for the set of AirPods, but if you lose one, they're going to hit you again.
Oh, dude, I think I'll take the $20 Bluetooth earbuds.
And, you know, the idea behind this is that it's going to put Siri in your ear and on your wrist, so much so that, hey, maybe you don't even need an iPhone. That's going to be, you know, top of the line. And I think that's the gamble that this article was taking, that Apple's, yeah, services in the iPhone industry are going down, but its wearables and home products is definitely going up. And that kind of signals that, you know, it doesn't really matter, because if you have an iPhone or a watch or an AirPod, you're still going to be in that Apple ecosystem. And Apple's just perfectly content with that, because you might purchase something like AppleCare, you might purchase a TV subscription, just to name a couple things. And that's what we're going to be seeing more of this fall. So
cool.
All right. This next story is a really, really, really bad one. Really bad.
Looks pretty bad.
Yeah. Do you have a Capital One credit card?
No.
Have you ever applied for a Capital One credit card?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, Capital One has been breached with more than 100 million Capital One customers' accounts and credit card applications being accessed. This includes 140,000 American Social Security numbers, 1 million Canadian social insurance numbers, and 80,000 bank account numbers. And this also includes an undisclosed number of names, addresses, credit scores, credit limits, balances, and other information.
They've got your name, social security number, and bank number.
Uh-huh.
Done.
Uh-huh. So for anybody,
who knows where these are going.
Yeah. So for anybody who, you know, even considered applying for one of these cards, you need to be wary, because the clincher is here in Canada, and I don't know how it works in the US, but Capital One backs MasterCard in Canada. So if you applied for a MasterCard in Canada, there's likely a chance that you're on this list. And to make matters worse, they found the woman who did this. Her name is Paige Thompson, and she actually broke into one of the Capital One servers and retrieved all this information. And she tried to share the information with other people online, and, you know, previously worked for Amazon of all companies, which is the cloud hosting company that Capital One was using. And, you know, she was able to gain access by exploiting a misconfigured web application firewall.
Huh.
So because of one misconfiguration, millions of people's identities are now in the loop. And to make matters worse, the information that was stolen goes all the way back to 2005.
When are they going to spend some of this money on security, some of these record profits?
You know...
Hell, just 1 year of the tax cuts.
Yeah, and you know, not defending the company in terms of being a banking institution, because we all know banking institutions are slimy, but when it comes to security and firewalls to this effect, misconfigured firewall is something that can happen to any company out there. So I'm not saying this is going to get them off the hook, but it's something that could have happened to any company out there, because firewalls are complex and, you know, they have entire IT teams dedicated to it. But if there's one server that is slightly misconfigured, this can happen. So it's no excuse, but nonetheless, it's still a major breach. And I think this is perhaps one of the biggest breaches that we've ever talked about here. So,
you know, let's hope that she didn't give it to anyone and was just basically auditioning for a job with the government so that she can protect our elections from the Russians. That's what you do with hackers, right? You hire them and make them work for you?
Yeah. And, you know, she was trying to archive all the information as well. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you do that. And if you she thought the information was sketchy, and another person told her, don't go to jail, please. So, you know, there was definite indications that what was happening was wrong. And at the end of the day, the culprit has been caught, but this isn't good for anyone. So
no, someone have to tell her it's wrong. I mean, I don't know anything about anything. I know that would be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even for our server, we host other websites and whatnot, and we make it a point to not, you know, necessarily look into home directories and whatnot unless we absolutely, absolutely have to. So, but all right. So just everybody keep your eyes open when it comes to credit scores in the foreseeable future. I guess that's the lesson on that one. Now, this next news comes from Google. They continue to release information about their new Pixel 4 smartphone, so much as so detailing its main feature, and that is a facial unlock camera grid, just as the new iPhones have. But they also have a new piece of technology called Motion Sense, which is said to effectively allow you to control your phone with your hands. So the idea behind this is that you would hold your phone in front of you and it would detect small motions around the phone. And with this, it would be able to do things such as skipping songs, snoozing alarms, and silencing phone calls. And these are just a few of the capabilities that they've highlighted at the start, and more will definitely be added in the future. Face unlock, I'm still not sure how I feel about that. I still prefer my fingerprint reader on my iPhone 8. But when it comes to hand gesture motions, I don't know if we're there yet. I mean, it looks interesting, but I don't know if it'll be practical. I think we're going to have to get it into our hands and see on that.
I'm not a fan of the facial stuff. I don't know. I don't think it works as well as a fingerprint. There's too many ways to get it open.
We're going to have to see how accurate this one is. But, you know, the iPhone has had problems before, being off at an angle. Or, you know, initially when it came out, we talked about someone spoofing it with a clay mask.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, how hard would it really be? Like, can you use a picture or something? Like, can
no. There is depth sensing involved, so it is safe from that perspective. And you know, I think the stance that all these companies are taking is that it's going to be so safe that the number of tries a culprit's going to need to make to have it unlock with a fake face is going to be more than it would need to kick you back to the point where you need to enter your passcode. Because just like your fingerprint reader, if it fails enough times, it's going to ask you for a passcode.
Okay.
So we'll see how Google's implementation is compared to Apple. But I think this is important for more than this, because it shows that you can still have a launch of a flagship device, and if everything about these devices is being leaked publicly online, why not just, you know, take the time and put out your own release where you can control the leak and get it out there beforehand? So we'll have to see if they continue doing this and if any other companies, you know, namely Apple, pick up on this and continue. So, all right. I don't have any other tech news for this week, so we're going to move on to other things, including the mammoth list of achievements for Double XP Weekend, which everybody loves doing.
Daddy.
Yes, definitely. But before we do that, I'll just mention that our two Skill of the Month competitions for August are going to be farming and crafting. Farming starts on August 9th and runs until August 16th. And crafting starts on August 21st and runs until August 28th. So we're running these for one week each, and with a couple days downtime in between them. And I figure, you know, it's better to run them one at a time and run them for only 7 days. That way then people don't get burnt out. And if you're doing one, you don't have to do the other one, and you don't need to really stress about it. So hopefully you guys enjoy this. Information, of course, will be posted about these on the forums as well. You guys wanted that this month, so we're going to do that. But if you want to sign up for either of these, just head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm, and you can sign up right there. I might sign up for the farming one. We'll see. All right, so shall we dive through this list of Double XP Weekend achievements?
Yep, let's just jump into it, right?
All right, so starting on July 31st, we have Jammo with 99 Fishing, Mad Housick with 99 Summoning, Hemsky with 99 Slayer, Yitzi with 99 Herblore. Now on the 30th of July, we have Patapolo with 99 Agility, Jade Gizmo with 120 Invention, Zach Masta on July 29th with 99 Agility, Zero Kosev Zero with 120 Summoning, Sebage with 120 Mining, Jammy Jenny with 99 Ranged, Jarrell with 120 Invention, Taffing Spy with 99 Dungeoneering. On the 28th, we have Sethiroth with 99 Smithing, Moo Dragon X with 99 Agility, Heroes Guild with 120 Strength, Goku SSJ Blue with 120 Defense. I appreciate the French spelling of the word blue there. State Bird with 99 Mining, Whiskey Panko with 99 Herblore, Takis Fugo with 99 Fletching, Moo Dragon X with 99 Fletching, Construction, and Crafting, Thieves with 120 Summoning on July 27th, Magic King with 99 Prayer on July 27th as well. The Lion with 200 mil fire-making XP on the 27th, going for those 200 mils. That's nice to see. Utanis got 120 range on the 27th, and Robbie got 120 crafting also on the 27th.
Nice. So, okay. Continuing on with the 27th, we have Whitney with 120 smithing, Mood Dragon X with 99 prayer, we've got Coded Ninja with 99 Invention, Marovic with 99 Crafting, Coded Ninja with 99 Construction, Sethiroth, 99 Dungeoneering, Izant with 120 Dungeoneering, Rob Dyrdek, wouldn't that be cool if that was a real Rob Dyrdek? Rob Dyrdek with 120 Dungeoneering, Juan S. with 99 magic. Wiley with 99 magic. Juan S. again with 99 defense. Coded Ninja with 99 hunter. NL Nightmare with 99 invention. Patapolo with 99 construction on July 26th. So these are all on the 26th now. Always Noob, 99 smithing. Juan S. with 99 strength. Mr. Jingles with 200 mil fire making. Lord Gimli with 99 fletching. Mr. Jingles with 200 mil magic. Heroes Guild with 120 slayer. Juan S. with 99 invention. Jay Hamo with 99 smithing. Jammy Jenny with 99 herb lore. Alexa Peaks with 99 summoning. Seth Eroff with 99 prayer. Mood Dragon X with 99 invention. Juan S. with 99 ranged. Rune Dragon with 99 crafting. Juan S. with 99 fishing. Pat Apollo with 99 invention. Okay. Delta with 99 construction. Juan S. with 99 attack. Elven Badass with 99 crafting. Dino's Aurora with 99 summoning. Juan S. with 99 woodcutting. Juan S. with 99 fire making. And Juan S. with 99 mining. Those are on the 25th. Sorry about that.
We could have probably split that a bit better than at the page break. But that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was easy to. It was easy for me to like see the where it was. So yeah.
All right. Congratulations, everyone. Nice work on Double XP Weekend. And, you know, I'll also share a bit of a page that we have here on this. We set up a page for Double XP Weekend that tracks all the RSB&B community's gains for Double XP Weekend synchronized to when Double XP Weekend started. So just head on over to rsbnb.com/dxpw and you can filter through that. You can filter it so it's just RSBNB. You can also filter it so it's Clan Quest as well, because we do the high scores for Clan Quest as well on here. And, you know, you can look through this and you can see that Amberlay got 26.1 million farming XP on Double XP Weekend.
Nice.
I got 3.6 million woodcutting XP on Double XP Weekend. We can also see this is another one that Chodo got 25.2 million smithing XP. Pernassius got 24.2. So, busy.
Cool. Is this something we can continue to do, Shane?
This one is set up for Double XP Weekends only. If people
Yeah,
for all the Double XP Weekends, we'll definitely have this running.
Ooh, cool.
But if people want high scores in general, there are the community high scores that you can use. You need to be a member of Clan Quest for that, or you can join our forums and just, you know, sign up, fill out the field that says your RuneScape name, and it will start tracking you if you make a post. And there it tracks your accomplishments. It also shows you how much XP you get in a certain day. It kind of ceases to be useful after you have all 99s, and we're going to see what we can do for making changes on that going forward. But nonetheless, it's an interesting exercise, to say the least. And, you know, that led nicely into my Informer article, and I knew I wanted to write this one eventually. And it's called Searching for the RuneScape Endgame. And this is important because we live in an era where, you know, we look at the XP that you can pull in on Double XP Weekend there, right? 26 million XP in farming, 25 mil in Slayer, 25 mil in smithing, 7 million XP per hour with the pitch can when you're fire making with the best logs on Double XP Weekend, 4 million XP an hour with dragon darts if you're fletching. And the point here is that even if you remove Double XP from all of this, XP is insanely fast in RuneScape. And I ask the question, what do you do after you get max if you don't want to do comp? And that's a discussion I have in this article. So I talk about why we can't cut the rates to, you know, 300 to 400,000 XP an hour, because that would be That would be nice. I think it would be nice, but it just won't work. And I go through the reasons for that. And this was spurred by a call I had with you last week. So it was good to have that chat. And I encourage everyone to give this a read at informer.rsbnb.com. All right.
Thank you, Shane. I'm more than a pretty face.
Yes. Very important. All right. So pick of the week time. You know, I'm going to go this week, and I want to bring this one up because it's currently on sale, and it's goes back to a game that I used to love playing in the late 90s called Worms. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I have.
But the entire Team 17 collection on Steam is on sale, and you can actually buy Worms WMD right now on sale as well with this. And, you know, it's a really fun game to play because you can play it split screen. You can also play it multiplayer. And, you know, it's not a physics simulator per se, but there's just so many funny things that can happen that it's a different game than a personal shooter. And, you know, of all the recent iterations, I think this is a good game to have because, you know, sometimes you just want to kick back. You want something less serious, and Worms is that game. So that's the pick of the week, Worms WMD, available on Steam. So, I would highly recommend it. Oh, apparently it's not on sale anymore. Google told me it was on sale for $10 US right now.
Oh.
But apparently it's back to its full price, so Google was wrong on that. But nonetheless, the entire collection is on sale if you would want to purchase that for some reason. But in any case, Worms WMD on its own is regular $30 Canadian. I don't know what that is for the rest of the world, maybe $24.99, but you can definitely have a look and have some fun with this game. So that's the pick of the week.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's an old, it's a new take on an old classic.
Cool.
What you been up to this week?
Resting. I went back to mining, and that's pretty much what I'm still working on my tier two tier two worker thing, the sleeping quarters. There you go. So I'm still hanging out on Anachronia a lot. So that's really all that I've done this week. I gave Junior a break. He worked real hard on Double XP weekend.
We got him some fresh armor for Dungeoneering.
Yes, I'm decked out. I'm ready. I just need to get me some combat levels so that I'm not a punching bag when I try to run through there.
The number of times I saw Tanis Junior was killed.
Dude, I'm telling you. I know. I felt bad. I'm like, I'm really decent at this, but not tonight. Not with this guy. Yeah. So, that's about it.
Okay. As for me on Double XP weekend, I focused largely on woodcutting, you know, the golden bamboo, Menophos, crystallized Acadia. Not too bad. You know, you only have to click once every 30 seconds or so with that, so it's fine. But aside from that, just some Dungeoneering with the group, and you were there, and I think that was good fun. So
it was a
low key double XP weekend, which I was proud of, and it didn't cost me a penny.
You know, I even heard that from my spouse. She's like, "You seem much better this time." I'm like, "Yeah, it's kind of relaxed. Like I'm not trying too hard." I'm like, "The next one will probably be a lot different." So. You might want to take a weekend trip.
Yeah, and we're on track for that in September or October probably, which it still seems really absurd that we're having three of them a year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I was fine with the two. The two I thought was sufficient, but and it made it more special. And I was fine with the two. That, yeah.
Yeah. All right, but Double XP weekend aside, I'm going to, after the show today, I'm going to finish my personal Codex page to get Double Surge on Anachronia, and I'm going to go back to Big Game Hunter and hopefully get that totem piece that lets me skip a stage for the Clue Scrolls because I want that one. But, you know, from the sounds of it, some people went hours upon hours upon hours of doing big game hunter kills and didn't get any. So I hope my luck will be better. But I don't really have much else to say, so I think we can wrap this one up and tee it off, call it done. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you want full show notes, update.rsbnb.com, patreon.com/rsbnb if you want to support the podcast, gain access to that monthly bit that we're doing tomorrow on the RS soundtrack. That's going to be a special one. And, of course, Friends Chat and Game is Bits Bytes. If you want to join us there, play with us, chat with us. There's almost always someone in there. One or two or three. So head on over there if you're playing in game, and we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See you next time.